Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ron Coomer, Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
Unbelievable.
1999 American League All-Star.
You might expect Wells to mix his pattern up. I mean, Coomer has owned David Wells.
This might work out.
The Coom Dog, every week with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David is out today, and Matt Spiegel, kind enough to get up and join us this morning. And what a delight to welcome in the man himself, Southsider made good, Ron Coomer. And he joins us on the El Pamonte Nissan Hotline, El Pamonte Nissan at Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Ron, good morning. How are you?
Mikey, I'm doing great. Matty, how are you guys doing today?
We're Greg Coom. Good to hear you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And, you know, we teased it coming in. Sweeping the Dodgers, it used to mean something. It used to be a big deal. I know they've been struggling of late, but they're still the defending champs. What does it say about the Cubs? They got good young pitching in that series, and they got a lot of runs and really did a great job. Can you have a tipping point, or is it just another series? And my God, we've seen some misery against Pittsburgh. Can we finally end that?
Yes, 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 maybe, and yes. you can have a tipping point in a Major League Baseball season, even though it's 162 games. You can. I thought in 2016 that happened with the John Lester squeeze bunt, and all of a sudden the Cubs rattled off 11 in a row and they took off, and there they were, right? And they end up winning a World Series. So it can happen. That last series had, even though the Dodgers were struggling and so were the Cubs, you still look at the Dodgers as the defending champs. And I really thought the Cubs elevated their game. They elevated their intensity in everything in that series. And needed to be quite honest, and it worked, right? Everybody participated. Everybody had a big hit. Everybody made a big pitch, and it worked out. Whether that's going to be the case, nobody knows that, Mikey. But there are times where certain series or certain plays or certain things tip the season over, and boy, you take off, and you're never to be seen from again. I played in New York one year, and we had a bases loaded situation against the Red Sox. Base hit to right, tie game, ninth inning. Trot Nixon comes in to field the ball. He's going to throw a guy out at the plate, and he whiffs on the ground ball. He whiffed it. It went all the way to the wall. We win, and the Red Sox were done. We were a game up. We ended up blowing them out for the rest of the season. And so things can happen that I've seen it before. It's not always likely, but I mean, you've seen it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Coom, I remember that play and poor Trot Nixon. I know how you felt about the moment when Javi came to Anthony Rizzo's defense and the whole team kind of rallied emotionally in Cincinnati when Amir Garrett, went over the line. And I remember you talking about it, saying, something like this can bring guys together. And we're also seeing like a unified approach with the lineup where everybody's battling every time. And as you say, different guys are stepping up. So can those things all kind of work together for a baseball team in the room where the emotions come together and then the at-bats and the intensities, solidify and unify a little bit?
Yeah, Matty, absolutely. They definitely can. I know when we were talking about that scenario, I kind of chuckled at the end of the ballgame going, maybe that's a little something the Cubs needed. Maybe that's the Southsider in me. I don't know, Mike. but sometimes, you might need to mix it up a little bit, and that's a good thing.
And then on the Sunday when they lose the 13-12 game, they battled back like four times that
right.
day.
Yeah, I like when there's stuff like that happens sometimes with a team that seems a little, I've played on some teams that were too nice in LA. 1 year, we were just too nice. We weren't that, yeah, we needed a little killer in us. And then I've played on teams like in New York where they, yeah, Derek Jeter's a nice guy. He's not a nice player. That guy's a killer. He would come out and he just wanted to beat your face in, and that was just it. And he didn't give in at all, and so did the rest of their team. We need a little bit of that, and we had it in 16, and we're hopefully getting some of that back.
And obviously, we know Zach Davies is on the bump this afternoon, Ron, and he has struggled to get to five innings. I think he's only gone four in his last five starts, and he had looked like he was going to be so helpful back in the Cactus League, and now you're kind of in the midst of it, and he's struggling. You know, one of the things you saw with the Dodgers sweep was great pitching and great young pitching, and now you got a guy who is a veteran guy that has a penchant for kind of pitching to contact and taking advantage of guys, and he's not getting it done this year. How important is this start?
It's important, and it's important for him to get back on track.
Yeah.
You know, it's a guy that's, you know, literally he's pitched around a 3 ERA in his career, and then it's not like he's a young guy in the league. So this is pretty rare for him to have these kind of struggles last this long, Mike. So I anticipate him figuring it out. I look at him, and it's a mechanical thing to me. And then what happens when that kind of breaks down, then all of a sudden the confidence kind of breaks down too with the other pitches. To me, it's his fastball. He's pulling the fastball across the zone on his glove hand side to the righties, right? So he can't control that down and away fastball. So when you can't throw a strike with your fastball where you want, then the team sees that you're playing, and they go, well, now we know what he's going with now. It's changeup. And when that's the case, you know, and you don't have deception with your best pitch, it makes it very difficult. And that's what's happened for me as a hitter. I'm no pitching coach, but as a hitter, that's what's happened to Davies. So it is very important that he gets back on track for the Cubs to be successful. I mean, they're leaning on him heavily. Right in the heart of that rotation, for sure.
I you know, but your thoughts on pitching and mechanics have proven prescient many a time. I remember talking about Craig Kimbrell with you last year, and he's saying, no, it's something mechanical. And then they were working on it, and then he figured it out. And he's still that guy. Any concern after a solo homer from Max Muncy? I saw that was at 95 instead of 98. But, you know, Kimbrell's looked so good all year, I'd hate to think there's any concern.
No, I don't at all. I really think when you look at Kimbrell, he's very good. When you're going to have concerns with Kimbrell, it's when you're going to start seeing the bad misses, the misses out of the zone, the non-competitive pitches. When he pulls that breaking ball into the left-handed batter's box or hits a guy and then another guy in the left-handed batter's box with his hook, that's when he's getting out of whack again mechanically, Matty. But I haven't seen any of that. And, you know, to be honest, his velocity's even up this year. Believe it or not, at his age, his velocity is back up to 97, 98. It's pretty impressive.
You know, Jesse Rogers wrote an interesting story about why the Cubs aren't hitting, and some scouts saying that it's kind of mind-boggling given the fact that they are getting 52.3% fastballs. Now, this was a couple days ago, but is it mind-boggling that they're getting that many fastballs? The fifth most in the major leagues.
Well, yes and no. You hope that that's going to change. That, you know, the first month of the season is one of those things where there's a lot of reasons for, you know, the lack of offense from the team. And I think that the offense, to be quite honest, has turned the corner. And I really believe they're going to do a better job offensively of putting the ball in play, hitting that fastball, Mike. But there's a lot of guys, you know, and there was a great article about Chris Bryant the other day, too,
right.
In SI.
Yeah, that was great.
And, you know, it talked about the swing change that him and his father made over the winter. And, you know, if you hear our broadcast, I preach when a guy's throwing high velocity, and this goes right back to your question. I'm not changing the subject. But when guys are throwing high velocity, high in the zone, so strikes, but at the top of the zone, not at the bottom of the zone. If your swing isn't direct to the baseball, you're not going to hit it. It's just that simple. And if you think you're going to upshoot your swing or get that upswing like they're talking about and elevating the baseball with a high fastball at 95, everything's got to be so perfect to do that. And it just isn't, right? I mean, we just don't do that all the time. And I think what you've seen with KB is his hands starting down to the ball and his hands being above the baseball. So he's hitting through the middle of the ball or the top half of the ball a lot of times. And that's why he's got more contact. Until we do that, we're not gonna catch up to the high fastball regularly.
See, this is the stuff I could talk and think about this stuff all day, Coom. I remember Tom Verducci several years ago in SI, he featured Lance McCullers and the curveball, the 12-6 curveball, and talked about how everybody was battling the launch angle guys by throwing that high fastball and then that breaker out of the same tunnel. And just like you said, it's Verducci again and SI talking about how Bryant and his dad went back into the lab and figured out a way for the launch angle guys to strike back, stand taller and swing down on the ball, or at least think about it like that. So is this Bryant transformation, is this something that his teammates should follow, that the rest of the league who's been struggling against this one style predominantly, should everybody else be kind of looking at this and thinking about following it too?
I'll say this. I was taught how to hit. I had some great hitting coaches, from some with the Cubs to Terry Crowley was a longtime hitter. Carlton Fisk was my personal hitting coach in the winter. I had Don Mattingly as my hitting coach. Wow. And worked with Donnie. Every single one of them, all these 17 straight years of hitting, all taught basically the same principle. And that's what KB's doing now. That's all this isn't Ron Coomer's theory on hitting. This is the great hitters of our game teaching guys that came through the league, you know, the Ron Coomers of the world that come through. And that was their idea. And they were taught by the great hitting coaches in front of them and players. If you're going to throw high velocity, you better get direct to the baseball and get on top of the ball, or else you're going to swing and miss.
It's fascinating.
When you think of Chris Bryant, and obviously, you know, we're talking about him coming back to MVP form, he's also playing all over the field. And I would think that any team that had aspirations would want Chris Bryant on their team. Now, I would also hope that there is an opportunity to re-sign him. And I know we're not supposed to keep talking about this or harping on this stuff, but my God, you know, it's getting to a point now where it's getting kind of late. And there's a year left on his deal, and you've got the trade deadline out there, and he's playing so well. And for all these reasons we're talking about, you know, people, I think Gordon Whitmire wrote a story. We talked to him yesterday about trading Chris Bryant. The White Sox should jump in. Anybody should jump in. But I don't know that that's the right idea, and I don't know why he's available. I'm still trying to figure it out, especially if the crowd is back to games soon, Ron.
Yeah, here's the thing. For a guy to make the kind of money, the real high-end money in our league, as a position player, you got to hit. You've got to impact the game with the bat in your hand. And KB had physical issues, and then he had mechanical issues, right? And he wasn't hitting for a while. And it was a very tough time for him, I'm sure, because he's never failed before with a bat in his hand, and all of a sudden he hit 200. And he had, 11 RBIs last year in that shortened season or something like that, and just a few home runs. So you flip it all of a sudden, and you see the kind of player he is. He just didn't hit, and that's what changes the whole program. But if this guy hits like he's capable of, like he's doing now, everybody in the world wants him. He's one of the best baseball players in the league because of what you're saying. He runs the bases extremely well. He can steal a base. He can play just about everywhere on the field and play it really well. But to impact the game, to sign the long-term high-end deal, you got to hit. And if he hits now, like he's one of the league leaders in just about all the key stats, he's going to get whatever he wants. He just will.
Boy, I hope it's here. I really do. I think he and Scott Boras have been committed to letting it play all the way through, just like his buddy Bryce Harper, and see what's out there. But Bryce Harper almost went back to Washington, Coom. They were in the conversation.
Oh yeah.
I hope the Cubs will be in the conversation, even if it goes all the way to the end.
Yeah, I think they will. If KB plays the way, if he swings the bat the way he's capable of swinging, the way we're seeing now, then they will be. There's no doubt. Yeah.
Does this series, I mean, obviously you look at Pittsburgh, is it about the Cubs pitching in this series? You know, just given what we saw against the Dodgers, why is this team a boogeyman team for the Cubs? It's just, it can't be allowed, right?
Kind of a pain in our backside, aren't
Yes.
I mean, seriously.
That's it. Makes no sense.
You know, when you started the season, I looked at the schedule and I went, Pittsburgh's totally rebuilding. Yep. And we play them like 12 times here in the month and a half. And I'm like, sweet. You know, and then I went, oh, that's not good. You know, after we're doing this, it's just like, oh, gosh. It is a big series because these are the teams, these are the games you need to win. Somebody just forgot to tell some of those young kids in Pittsburgh, like the Evans kid and some of these other kids that are playing in Pittsburgh, that they're not supposed to win. And they've been around, hovering around 500. They're a scrappy team. They put the ball in play. And on nights that they get pitching, you know, they can win a ball game. And I tip my hat because I was on one of those teams in Minnesota when I first got to the big leagues. And, boy, you play the Cubs or the Dodgers or somebody, and that's your World Series. That's it. That's what you're playing for. So, you know, you're getting a great effort out of the guys in Pittsburgh, I'll say that.
Coon, we've heard for years and we've watched for years the Cubs have had trouble developing their own pitchers. But then, lo and behold, look this week, Justin Steele in some big moments. Keegan Thompson, for his first big league start, represented pretty well. And then Adbert Alzolay is, man, I'm allowing myself to dream big on Adbert Alzolay because I see the stuff and the adjustment now with so much use of the slider, and he's making guys look bad up there. What's the ceiling on Adbert Alzolay as a starter in the big leagues, Coom?
When you look at him, he's got everything you'd want from a pitcher to be extremely successful, to be a one or a two, right? I mean, he's a high velocity command. He's got a sharp breaking pitch that really separates certain guys with that little cutter that he throws. So that is, I think, last year when they introduced the slider/cutter to him, and that became part of his repertoire. I think that really is a game changer for him because he can command it. Doesn't have huge breaks, so he can control that pitch. And I thought Keegan Thompson, you know, the thing about him, too, he got two ground ball double play balls in situations to get him out of the inning. Well, that goes right back to that sharp cutter, too, that, you know, he's got life on his fastball and good life. You know, you're talking mid-90s, but it's that little tight cutter that induces a ground ball when the hitter thinks he's on the pitch and he got ground balls. I think he's another guy that has the high ceiling, you know. He's got to stay healthy, right? He hasn't stayed healthy, so that was his problem. I don't know about Steele. Steele's been a guy that's, you know, he's emerging. But, boy, I don't care what game you're watching. When a young guy comes off the field fired up because he just got the job done, that just fires me. I'm getting stoked.
Javi Baez jumped over the rail. He was ready to go at him. It was Amir Garrett-like, only with reason.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's just, I love watching young guys because then you know they're fans of our game, right? It means it's in their soul that they're a baseball guy when things like that happen. That's what it is. That's what it tells me.
Well, we know it's in your soul. Ron, you're the best. Thank you, buddy.
Take care, guys. Have a great weekend, and hopefully we'll have some sunshine here at Wrigley Field and three wins in a row.
All right. Thanks, that's a plan. Let's do it. It's Mully and Haw, Matt Spiegel sitting with us. We got James Fegan from The Athletic joining us next. We're going to talk some White Sox and the big series with the Royals that isn't as big anymore because the Royals have been losing and the Indians are in charge. Mully and Haw on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Tony, Ostada using Hendricks as the runner in the second inning, was that an intentional choice? As the rule book says, you could have, you know, used Abreu as the pinch runner in that case.
You have to use the guy who made the last out, and that was Vaughn, not Abreu. So Vaughn made the last out.
The rule book, the MLB.com, said if the player in the batting order immediately preceding that half inning's leadoff hitter is the pitcher, the runner placed on second base may be the player preceding the pitcher in the batting order. Did, like, the umps explain anything like that? Or?
Well, you know, I didn't know that. We all thought that Liam was going to be the runner, and that's why I wanted there, because if you wanted a double switch to keep him in the game, if you look at all, you know, Abreu back to Moncada and so forth, that's not who you want to double switch out of the game. So I wasn't aware that Abreu could run. I thought it had to be the guy who made the last out or that spot in the order.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel, kind enough to sit in for David this morning. And we're delighted to welcome in James Feegan from The Athletic, brought to you by El Pamonte Nissan. El Pamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. And James, I know you weren't trying to embarrass Tony La Russa there. You were just asking a very honest question. Were you surprised that he did not know the rule, or that no one in the dugout told him the rule? And, you know, it was a bad moment, frankly, for the White Sox and for Tony. And I thought there were a couple of equally bad moments in that 10th inning, like trying to steal second and leaving the bat in Billy Hamilton's hands. But were you surprised even as you had that exchange?
Yeah, my default assumption usually is that they have a reason for what they're doing. And it's not like I'm not someone who has the instant thing of what I've seen doesn't look right. So the person doing it must be have no idea what they're doing, and I'm right, and I have all the information that they don't. So, yeah, I had called up the rule because I had some buddies who cover National League ball like say, like, hey, I don't think they need to do that. They could have swapped in another runner. So I'm, like, looking at the rule. I'm going back and forth with the MLB to make sure I have the rule right and that, like, I'm not missing some exception that forced them to have Liam Hendricks out there. And that's why I have it in front of me, and I'm reading it out loud. Because I literally just found about the rule like a half hour ago. I can't memorize and read it from memory. But up until the point where it seemed it was clear that he was under the impression that they had to run the pitcher, I assumed like there's going to be some reason that they give for why they did this. I don't answer with the assumption that everybody else doesn't know what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah, it was a fascinating moment, James. I was on Twitter following you and maybe following some of those same National League guys. I know Mike Farron, who covers the D-backs, was hip to it. And I didn't know it in full context till I looked it up. So it is a little vague and a little weird. If you could you give us your best understanding of how it went down in terms of conversation with the other coaches? Because he answered a question there in the post game that they talked to him, but they didn't talk to him about that rule. They talked to him about the double switch. Did they want to stop that double switch because it put Hendricks in the position that it did?
I don't really have that kind of clarity. They did come out and talk about it. Whether or not they were firming it up or they were raising concerns, and it wasn't heard, it's really not known. And maybe that's something for him to specify today. So I'd kind of imagine they want to revisit it less rather than more.
You think?
Oh boy, James.
So I couldn't really say with certainty.
I thought about it a thousand different ways. I still don't understand why Leury García is trying to run there, and that out was huge. I still don't understand that. I don't know what you feel was the worst decision in that inning, if it was putting your $54 million closer running the bases, if it was even if you knew the rule, right? Or the steal, or again, Billy Hamilton striking out to end that opportunity. When you get that whole game, they couldn't get a run, and you get a guy in third base, you got to get that guy in, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me what I thought was worse, I think I'd probably go with the steal. I mean, at least in terms of putting Hendricks out there, they seemed aware that they were putting the $54 million closer, which is why I thought it was an issue. I felt like it handicapped them strategically because right. They weren't going to, like, call a suicide squeeze and have Liam Hendricks bust it down the line. Like, they knew what they were doing. They weren't going to have him extremely aggressive send on a hard single to the outfield and try to score from second either. I thought limited to what they were doing and probably precipitated some of the weirdness that winds up going around.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think the steal, with Billy Hamilton not really being a double play threat, and it seemed like it was based off the idea that them having the infield in, that they'd be unprepared. I didn't really love that assumption, and obviously it didn't work out. With Hamilton, yeah, it's obviously a bad situation that he's kind of hitting with the game on the line, but to some degree, I understand the concern of that they're just so out of options defensively, and you know, like Adam Eaton, it seems like his soreness was to a level that they really didn't want him to play. So as much as him hitting in that situation would be a lot more viable, I guess they're really worried about him playing the field in the bottom half of the inning. So without knowing just how bad his situation is, they were really adamant about him getting 2 days off. I can't say like he should have been there. So, and he can play the outfield.
It's amazing. They are still 16-13, half game behind the Indians. They have the best run differential in the American League. And I absolutely look at them still as the best team in that division with the way that the Twins have started at the very least. So they are able to overcome all sorts of stuff. Does it appear to you that the answer to the outfield shortage is going to be in-house, whether it's a new minor leaguer like Brian Goodwin or eventually a little more Nick Williams or whatever they can do? I wonder what the chances are of a trade for Joey Gallo or to the Reds for Tyler Naquin, or like it seems like they're going to stay in-house to solve the outfield problems, at least for now. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say at least for now. I mean, certainly. I mean, it's funny to call Brian Goodwin in-house since that was like 48 hours ago. But
true.
Yeah, it seems like over the next month they have to kind of scrap it together. You know, especially something that would, you know, both make sense short-term and long-term, like Gallo. Like, that would obviously take a while to come together and probably have to wait till mid-July. You know, I get the reason that people are dreaming on that is because you could theoretically stick him in center for a bit and then shift right, and then you have a legit right fielder going forward, you know, beyond this year. But, yeah, they kind of have to deal with what they have. And I'd agree with you that, yeah, the talent's there, especially with the way they pitch, that they could be the best team in the AL Central. But I think maybe what's causing the angst is that it's no longer this margin of error where, you know, they can play kind of sloppy or they can – lose a couple of games with you know, questionable tactic decisions, and they're just so much more talented. Everyone else is going to cover it up. Without Eloy, without Luis Robert, I think it's a bit more. They actually have to play well. They actually have to do things well. They have to execute well, and you know, that's something they have to prove is in them going forward.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I have a lot of friends who are Sox fans, and I hear from them all the time, and the big concern is now all about tactics in game and you know what Tony La Russa is doing. The outfield has got to be the only real main concern. You've got to get better players in the outfield. You got to get Adam Engel back, and you got to get moving forward in some fashion. Are they going to have to create runs here? Is this going to be a small ball team, given how good the pitching staff has been and how good the bullpen should be?
When we asked Tony that very question, he said, yeah, it's inevitable that they'll have to shift towards manufacturing runs a bit more often. I don't think we necessarily saw a ton since the injuries happened, but also it's been kind of one game where they're hitting the daylights of the ball and one game where there's literally no base runners to manufacture with, so it's hard to really gauge at this point. But, yeah, I think they're making that shift. I would say, you know, you really haven't seen – I mean, Jose Abreu has kind of kept it going in terms of production, home runs, RBIs, but you really haven't seen him, like, you know, hit like Jose Abreu yet.
Right.
And obviously, I think everyone knows that Yasmani Grandal is, you know, as much as I respect him drawing walks, like, Yasmani Grandal, when he's hot, is not a 130 hitter. So I think you haven't really gotten middle-of-the-order production from two guys who have been middle-of-the-order guys for their entire career, or most of it. So I think that's where it kind of has to normalize to carry this team. I mean, they were getting production from the outfield to kind of drown that out for the first month, and now the bounce kind of needs to shift.
What are you seeing from Lucas Giolito at the moment, James? Obviously, the disaster in Boston was no fun, and then bumpy late with Detroit, and he said afterwards that he was out of gas. Better against Cleveland. Is this... does he look like himself as you watch him these days?
For the most part, you know, I would say, like, the last two outings, the velo has been fine after, you know, there was a little bit of concern with him going to 91, 92 a bit more often. after the, the Boston start, you're thinking, man, is he tipping his changeup in some way? Or and he's gotten the requisite number of swings and misses for you to think that he's kind of normal the last two times. You just haven't seen him fully in sync mechanically. You've seen him, something he identified was kind of just failing his fastball and missing arm side and having to take off on him more than he does when he's locked in. It seems like little things. I would say for the most part, he seems like he's incorporating his slider a bit more often, like his goal was this year. I don't know. He doesn't seem quite, locked in or anything like that, but it doesn't feel like something's broken in him or there's something major off where, it would keep him from going on a run here when he really gets into a good place with his command.
We're going to see your mean Mercedes this weekend, James, after he missed a game on Sunday, didn't turn up on time, excusable. I don't know what that means, but it happened.
Sunday morning traffic can be a bear,
well,
man.
Whatever, that was a pity. And then obviously the National League. Where's he at? What are we expecting from him? Has the dip begun? Is there going to be an inevitable dip?
There's going to be an inevitable dip because I think he had like a 450 the BIP at like some point. And, he was hitting the ball hard, but I don't think anyone it's really hard to, especially in 2021 baseball, to hit the ball hard enough to sustain a 450 batting average. So I was actually looking at the last eight games. He's like, something like 240 with a 296 OBP or something like that. But, he's not like striking out a ton. He's not getting just overwhelmed. He's not like somebody who had like a ton of swing and miss, but, it was peppering in or getting lucky hits around it. It always seems like he gives himself a chance in plate appearances. He makes plenty of contact, and we know that he has plus raw power. So, yeah, I don't think he's going to be a top five hitter in the American League going forward. But as far as just giving him everyday TH at bat, I mean, that seems like your best option right now. And I don't think he's shown you some big warning signs that he's not going to be able to be, at least a good guy to be in the lineup, even if he's not, an all-star from here on out.
Yeah, I think that approach plays. It'll level off, of course, but, the way that he adjusts is just beautiful. Let me ask you about Dylan Cease real quick. Terrific. These last couple of starts and the control, is this a turning point for Dylan? It could be.
It seems like it. I would say that his control is still more, it's gotten to the level of, man, his stuff is so good, he could just be in the zone. You'd think he'd be pretty good. And that's kind of what the level he's gotten to is. He's kind of just making competitive pitches now. He's never going to be a pinpoint command guy, and I don't think he's really gotten there, and you certainly saw him like shake out of his control at points in the red start, but it's a lot of competitive misses now. And as much as I like to be a guy who breaks down his mechanics, and it certainly seems like he's doing good work as far as staying over his back leg and not opening up too soon, everything from Dylan just sounds like he stopped thinking about mechanics, that he stopped thinking about hitting certain checkpoints in his delivery and how he needs to do that every single time when he's on the mound, but just is, I've done the work, I'm trusting at this point, I'm just going to focus on shaping pitches and executing and not making himself conscious at every step. So you hear a lot of athletes just saying like, oh, I just simplified or I always stopped thinking about things and I got better. But as far as I can tell, that's the story here.
Great stuff. Really appreciate it, James.
All right, thanks for having me.
That's James Feakin from The Athletic. Does a great job. We're going to get back with your calls. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw with Matt Spiegel on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. A ton of fun this morning because Matt Spiegel sat in, and not that I don't have a ton of fun with David, but it's always nice to mix things up a little bit. And Matt, we really appreciate you getting up and doing double duty, working late yesterday and coming in this morning. It's a lot of fun.
Very fun. Always love talking to you, Mully, on the air, off the air. And thank you guys for having me. It's fun. No, I love when we do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When we get a chance to mix it up a little bit, because we all know how to try and make chemistry happen. And to do these experiments live is pretty damn fun.
Yeah, it's good. And it's good to talk baseball with you, frankly, because I have had a lot of, what would you call it, sort of difficulty with this baseball season, both sides of town.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to complain too much about the White Sox because they're over 500 and they've been okay. And they've had different moments where you thought they were ready to break through. And just the injuries have been so deflating. And to see them come back, they, you know, when you lose Louis Robert and you come back the next day and you win 9-0 and you're like, oh, they know, they're ready to go. They understand how important it is.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you lose a 10-inning game, which is what they do. They get the 10th inning and they lose. And then you have this ridiculous turn of events and all that went on with that. You know, the Reds score one run. That's a great offense, and they score one run in two games and they split. That's not right. And here you go. Now you got to get into Kansas City and put these guys in their place, and it's important to do it.
And hopefully you see something that is fun and cool and beautiful, right, about the game, and remind you know, like I just tweeted this thing, Gleyber Torres of the Yankees, he scored from first.
That was unbelievable.
A ball didn't incredible leave the infield because he takes advantage of the shift.
He comes tear arson around second, and he just keeps going. And you're like, what are you doing? And then he sees the catcher, his run up, and he just races, yes, into the plate. That was the highlight in baseball yesterday. I agree with you. That looked like it looked like a high school game where you had a team that couldn't field well, and you're just going to keep, you know, hit him with the run game.
It's human ingenuity, man. Just like, all right, nobody's covering third, so he runs to third. Catcher runs up from home, and he's like, wait, now I could beat you to the plate. And he just goes by him and beats him to the plate. Absolutely gorgeous and so cool. And it's just, what, you know, the game can give you that kind of stuff. And I hope for your sake you get more of that with the White Sox, because he got the talent to do it. And I have felt empathetic to White Sox fans this year, because sometimes the managerial stuff insults my sensibilities. But also sometimes I just feel like you waited 5 years and this is supposed to be super fun.
Right.
And there's been too many things that have been down or weird or distracting or unfortunate. So hopefully you get some smoother sailing, because frankly, you deserve it.
And I also think, and this is important to remind myself, I think we're wasting a lot of airtime and a lot of effort with this, oh, Tony La Russa, this must stop, this must get, this can't go on any longer. When will someone intercede? It's not going to happen. Tony La Russa is the kind of guy who's not going to quit. He's not going to admit that the game has passed him by, or that he's slow on the draw, or whatever way you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. He is too intimidating to the people around him, or too unwilling to listen to them, whichever it might be. And we don't know that. So I don't think that's going on. And I know people want that to happen. And Jerry Reinsdorf is not going to fire Tony La Russa after coaxing him out of retirement. He's not going to do it a month into the season. He's not going to do it by the trade deadline. I honestly think we're wasting our time thinking that Jerry's going to fire Tony because there's slow on that. That's not happening. And Tony doesn't seem ready to quit. And I think I understand why people feel that way, but it's also a lot of howling into the wind.
Yes, it's screaming into the void because you feel powerless on some level. But team is good enough to overcome it. And, you know, I love we're blessed to be in a two-team town.
I know.
Let's
so
go.
True.
You know,
so true.
They both are capable of giving us some stretches where you can feel good about the game. The Cubs might be in the middle of one. We'll see if it lasts through today's game against the Pirates.
Yeah, there you go. Momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. So let's hope that it'd be great if Zach Davies gives him a little momentum,
just
right?
Just a little.
We saw the young pitchers, as you pointed out, really do well. And it was a ton of fun. So.
Mm.
All right. It's been great, Matt. Appreciate it. Our guy, the Gridiron Assassin, checked in to say that I should watch the great Ted Lasso TV series. I've watched it. It was so uplifting. If you need a little pep in your step, go ahead and watch that. And the other thing I watched during quarantine was The Dawn Wall. I believe Connor McKnight was the person that recommended that. And my God, that I've watched it four times. that's how much it meant to me. It really gave me triumph of the human spirit.
Wow, that's awesome. I'll check that out. Have you watched In and of Itself on Hulu?
No.
If you have a moment, you've got an hour and a half to give yourself. It's a one-man show by a magician, but it's more than just magic. It is brilliant and conceptual and really, really cool. So In and of Itself.
Excellent.
Check it out.
I love it. I love getting any recommendation. All right. I want to thank everyone. Thank you, Matt, most of all, for getting up and coming in. Want to thank Connor O'Donnell for keeping us on the air. Connor, God bless you. Want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing. And most of all, thank you very much for listening. We certainly appreciate you doing that. It's what it's all about. And Dan and Layla are going to have Ian Happ right out of the box. First time he's talked since he had that terrible collision in Cincinnati. We'll get to hear from him. We want to thank our executive producer. His name is Dustin William Rhodes.
So you tried some avocado tequila, Racer. Michael?
No. I was sticking with good old dirty vodka, my vodka, just drinking my vodka.
And Ray Diaz, I get emotional every time I thank you, man. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, bro.
It's a lot. And Mike Rankin. Mike, thanks a ton for helping us out today. Really appreciate your contribution.
South Slider.
South Slider. Mm-hmm. All right, Dan and Layla are next with Ian Happ. Don't forget, Stoney's on with Lawrence later in the day. It's a big day on the score, as always, and we got the Cubs game. It's going to be tons of fun. It's Mully and Haw. He's Matt Spiegel on the score.